tremendous ability with a question mark.
Yes, thank you. That was on purpose. Okay, so in a second, I want to discuss aspects of metastability in different regimes of the string coupling. And in particular, I want to discuss this in the context of black holes. So since the title contains two a priori unrelated elements, let me start with a twofold motivation. So the first part of the motivation is about the fundamental description, or the search for fundamental description of non-extremal black holes. And to understand its microscopics, we need to understand evolution. So semi-classically, we have the picture that the massive star collapses to form a black hole. There's a central singularity where everything accumulates, and this is cloaked by a horizon. And then subsequently, via Hawking's evaporation process, the black hole evaporates away. Now, we know that there is at least three conceptual problems with this picture. The first is, if we have a traditional horizon that doesn't contain any of the information by which the black hole formed, and if the black hole subsequently evaporates via Hawking's process, then information is lost. And in a unitary theory of black hole evolution, this is not what should happen, and so we have to ask how we can restore unitarity. Then the other puzzle is related as well to the black hole, to having a black hole horizon. And so this horizon has an area. One can ascribe an entropy to this area. For a solar mass black hole, this area is a large number. It tells us that there are so and so many underlying microstate configurations. But in gravity, there is only one state. And so this is a problem, or we have to understand it. And the ADCFT correspondence has given us a very powerful handle to understand this microscopic degrees of freedom for some classes of black holes, notably for supersymmetric black holes. And then furthermore, this understanding is restricted to a regime where there is no black hole. It's a weak coupling where the counting of microstate is done. And so in order to make sense of the entropy, we should probably better understand what it means at strong coupling and what the microstates are at strong coupling. And then obviously, in the theory of quantum gravity, one has to resolve the central singularity. And the scale is at which, and the question is at which scale does this resolution happen? Now there are three quite bold proposed answers to these questions. The first is, okay, so we lose unitarity because we have a horizon, so let's just put a real surface there. But one cannot just put anything there. One needs to make sure that whatever one puts there doesn't fall in, and it also should behave as the black hole horizon. So in particular, if one tunes the gravitational constant, whatever one puts there should behave in the same way as the horizon would. So we need a mechanism to do this. To answer the question of what the microstates are at strong coupling, one should better use a framework where one can do actual calculations. So let's ask string theory what these microstates are. And probably that the best one could do is if there was a basis of microstates that spans the full black hole microstate Hilbert space, which has a geometric description. So that would be great if that were the case. And then now we are in string theory, and string theory is, there's been a lot of study of singularity resolution in string theory, and it often happens that singularities are resolved not only just in a region around the singularity, but affect the large scale physics. So if we now ask how the singularities of a black hole are resolved in string theory, it might not seem so far-fetched that this scale could not be the Planck scale, but actually some larger scale like the horizon. So now
in the other cases, isn't it where there aren't these resolutions at the string scale?
For example, you take the Enhanson, or you take time-like singularity resolutions in string theory. There are low mass modes that affect, physics on microscopic scales, and actually the region around the horizon in a macroscopic regime is completely excised.
But you could see that from the
one. Is that always the case that you can see it in? I don't think in.
Okay. Are there always CTCs?
For the Enhanson, there was something which Kalosh and friends called the repulsor, which was this naked, which was this timeline singularity that ended up being shielded. And it had.
Was it shielded in a region of the space time where you couldn't know just from core energy that there should be something going on?
Basically, from the point of, I think relative, the only clue, I think the only clue in relativity that there was a problem was that the singularity seemed worse than the other Kalman singularities. But I don't recall that in all cases there was a photon that occurs.
Okay.
These things are all string theory, sorry, string length.
No, they're not. No. They can actually be macroscopic in size. Yeah. And the
dynamical.
It's actually interesting how it happens, and it's something you wouldn't see in gravity, but you have brains, and the brains really puff out to the planet size.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's repackage these three questions and ask the following. Given that we want to keep the black hole asymptotics, because that's something that is consistent with observations, so we fix the black hole charges, all the conserved charges at infinity, and then we ask, are there string theory configurations that have these asymptotics, but which do not have a horizon? And so, in some sense, fix the UV and explore the IR. And so we should take an example. I mean, to make progress for this question, one should take an example that is well understood. And what is well understood in string theory is extremal black holes. So we start with an asymptotically flat extremal black holes and ask this question. And maybe somewhat surprisingly, 11-dimensional supergravity has solutions which are smooth, which have the same asymptotic charges as a black hole, but where the horizon is replaced by some non-trivial topology that is threaded by flux. So these configurations have no singularity, they have no horizon, so they also don't have the problem of the information paradox. And then somewhat an open question is whether there is whether these configurations span the full black hole Hilbert space. Interestingly, there is a new kind of object, which is called superstrata, and which seems to give you, in a perturbative counting, the right number or the right scaling of the black hole entropy. There is no supergravity solutions for these objects yet. But there is some counting argument which I believe will appear soon. So if this third question is also answered positively, then it seems that for extremely charged black holes, there is indeed a coherent state basis of microstates. Well, so this was now for extremal black holes. The real world doesn't have extremal black holes. So what happens to this story if one goes away from extremality? And the way one can do is, brings me to the second, well, actually, let me discuss first the implications of this. So for the extremal black hole, we said that, so this is the Penrose diagram of the extremal black hole. This is the horizon and the singularity. And these microstate configurations have topology that is threaded by flux, and space-time ends before you reach the horizon. So the space-time inside is completely excised. And this somehow agrees well with studies of instability of extremal horizons in gravity. And the question does this extend to non-extremal black holes? Is the singularity resolved inside the inner horizon? Or, and if this was the case, then we would still have the information problem, because we need to get the information out all the way here, out of the outer horizon. So either this is what happens to the singularity, or that happens. And so the singularity would be resolved all the way to the outer horizon, and space-time would end before you reach, the first horizon you can meet. And this seems to agree with considerations of black hole evaporation by qubits in the context of Schwarzschild black holes. And now we can ask, can we probe this question? Can we find make progress to answer what the singularity resolution scale is? And this brings me to the second part of the motivation, which involves metastability from using anti-brains. And the general idea to get metastable configuration is the following. So you start with a supersymmetric background that has charge dissolved in flux. So this can be some Calabi-Yau with some warp throat. And then you put brains in. If you put brains that are supersymmetric with respect to the background, then nothing much happens. But if these brains turn out to have an opposite charge in the background, then you can be lucky and find some metastable minima for brains in these backgrounds. Now, they are metastable. That means they're classically stable, but they can quantum mechanically tunnel to the supersymmetric configuration. And so let me give the explicit example here, to which I will come back later. So you can put, for example, NTD3 brains on the tip of the Klebanov-Strassler warp deformed conifold. The tip is an S3, which is this, that is threaded by m units of D3 brain flux. And you can now put a number p of ender brains there. These ender brains can polarize via the Myers effect to an NS5 brain that wraps a 2-sphere inside this 3-sphere at a finite radius. And then, and this corresponds to a metastable minimum for these ender brains. And then it can tunnel quantum mechanically to the supersymmetric minimum. And in this process, the NS5 brain sweeps over to the south pole of the S3, and its negative charge annihilates against the positive charge of the background. So at the end, you can tunnel from T under the three brains that are polarized down to a configuration where you're left with a bunch of D3 brains. So this is the picture of how you can get metastability from ender brains. And this is very appealing because it means that one can use ender brains in backgrounds with charge dissolved in flux and have a mechanism where supersymmetry is broken in a controllable way. And this has a lot of applications. So you can now study non-supersymmetric gauge theories. You can study metastable states in a dual gauge theory to this metastable brain configuration if the space-time has ADS asymptotics. It is also very important for cosmology, because now you can put anti-brains and uplift the ADS space-time or the ADS landscape to the de Sitter landscape and have a very small cosmological constant that you can tune. And then you can also use these anti-brains to do black hole physics and construct near-extremal microstates by putting anti-brains in flat, asymptotically flat backgrounds. So this was the motivation. My talk, the rest of the talk, will have three parts. In the first part, I will show you how one can use metastability to get near-extremal microstate configurations and discuss some of the physics. In the second part, I will discuss what happens when you try to take these anti-brains all the way to strong coupling, and I will make some general comments on anti-brain back reaction. And then in the last part, I want to ask what happens to anti-brains when I take them to weak coupling. And I will use the quiver quantum mechanics approach to study metastability in that regime. Are there any questions at this point? OK. Metastability in black hole microstates. So this is, again, the same idea as I motivated in the beginning. You take some supersymmetric background that has charge dissolved in flux, and you put some antibrains. Applied to black holes, this means the following. So I fix my asymptotics to be that of a black hole, an extremal black hole, notably, because that's what we can do in supergravity. So this is a configuration that has the same asymptotics as an extremal black hole. It has a deep throat. And then instead of hitting a horizon, there is some topology, non-trivial topology, that is threaded by flux. So this is the background. And in such backgrounds, I want to place brains that give rise to metastability. And the kind of brains that turn out to do the job are so-called supertubes. And these probes will be placed on these non-trivial cycles here. And they will have opposite charge as the charge in the flux that is threading this cycle. So let me be more explicit. So I want to study five-dimensional, asymptotically flat, extremal charged black holes, which have three different kind of charges. And these three different kind of charges come from three different warp vectors. These black holes can have rotation. And then they have some electromagnetic potential that is related to the warp vector in this way. Now, this could be a black hole. But now, so we fix the UV. So that's what also the asymptotics of microstates looks like. And now we ask, what else can there be there in the IR? And if you want to get rid of the horizon, we need at least two additional ingredients. Those are Chern-Simons terms and non-trivial topology. Yes?
For DS4 is the topology.
That is the four-dimensional base. That's just, okay, I will now tell you what it is for microstates. But so this is a four-dimensional spatial base, and this is time, k is some angular momentum vector. And this could be the metric for the black hole. But now, in order to get something else instead of the horizon, we need to modify both metric and electromagnetic potentials. And the way to do it is the following. So first, we need to get rid of all the brain sources. And in 5 dimensions or 11 dimensions, the Lagrangian, supergravity Lagrangian, has an extra term, the Chern-Simons term, which allows you to have asymptotic electric charge just by having magnetic flux without any brain sources. So now we can have a smooth configuration where there's no sources, but there's only magnetic flux. And the magnetic-magnetic interaction give then rise to asymptotic electric charge. So to have these terms, we need to add the magnetic field strength for these fluxes to the electromagnetic potential. And then these fluxes have to be somewhere. And where they are is on topological cycles. So we need to modify this four-dimensional base. And we need to put some non-trivial topology, which can be done, for example, by four-dimensional multicenter Taubnert space. So you can have multiple regions where this two cycle shrinks to zero size. So you have multiple centers. And then you have this two sphere in between on which you put the magnetic flux. So this DS4 is actually, so this is three-dimensional flat space. And there is some fiber on top of this base, which builds up this non-trivial topology. So this is how you can get microstates, BPS microstates, for five-dimensional asymptotically flat charged black holes. And if you want to uplift this to 11 dimensions, well, you just add the corresponding pieces for a trip, I mean, for a simple internal six torus. Five-dimensional solution is just trivially uplifted. Are there any questions at this point concerning the supersymmetric configurations? Okay, so now I want to place some anti-brains. And the anti-brains that give rise to metastability in these configurations are so-called supertubes. As the name says, these are tubular brain configurations. They have lower dimensional brain charge dissolved in flux. Those give rise to two electric charges, Q1 and Q2. They are tubular, so they give rise to a local dipole moment, D3. And these configurations are stable because there is angular momentum on the world volume, which is related to the charges in that way. So if you put a supertube in flat space, this is a stable configuration. It's supersymmetric. And you can compute the Born-Infeld action for this object. And that's what you get. So this is a potential in terms of the radius of the tube. And this object stabilizes at a supersymmetric radius where the energy is just given by the sum of the electric charges. So these objects are stable in flat space. And now I want to put them in this supersymmetric microstate geometries. The story is similar. It's just a bit more complicated because these supertubes can be thought of as M5 brains if I talk in 11 dimensions. These M5 brains will wrap two of the internal two tori. So I split the six torus into three two tori. The lower dimensional brain charge is given by two M2 brains that each wrap one of those two tori. And then the tube also wraps the fiber of the base. So this is really sitting on one of the topological cycles. Yes?
In the supertube, I mean, I was picturing it as like a cylinder. Is that right?
Well, this comes, for example, from strings that go along internal torus directions. So you can cut it like this.
A torus? I mean,
so this is internal in this direction. I mean, still there is a.
Oh, okay.
So it rotates on this fiber. So this is the rotation.
Internal torus, and then wraps.
And then it wraps the fiber and rotates on the fiber.
I see.
Yeah. So then you can do the same calculation for the supertube. Again, you have these two square root pieces coming from the gravitational interaction. And then there's also some coupling to the background, which is no longer flat. So there's some Westermino contribution. And you will again find supersymmetric minima. All the terms cancel out except the sum of the electric charges. So those are the supersymmetric minima of supertubes in this microstate configurations. And you can play around with the parameters and find that there's also metastable minima. And so I talked about supersymmetric minima. So for example, here you find a bunch of supersymmetric minima. And over here you find some metastable minima. So these minima have an extra energy compared to the supersymmetric case. And now you can ask what happens if you backreact these probes. If you backreact probes in a supersymmetric minimum, then they will just smoothly backreact into another supersymmetric microstate configuration, where the mass of the corresponding black hole is just given by the background charges plus these extra tube charges. For the metastable minima, however, if you were to backreact them, then they would have an extra energy as compared to the supersymmetric extrema case, and those would then be non-extrema. So now I want to briefly discuss two features of these configurations. In the beginning, I showed you that you, for under the three, yes?
You said the back reaction in this case has no problems with singularities. It's
I didn't say that.
You didn't.
I'm saying if you were to back react, you would expect, in analogy to the supersymmetric case, well, if you were to back react and the back reaction is fine, then these configurations have extra energy. So they would be non-extrema. I'm coming to the problem. Yeah, so what are the features of these configurations? So I showed you in the motivation that you can, for example, enter the three in Clevenos-Strassler, you can have them polarize and then tunnel to the supersymmetric minimum via brain flux annihilation. Same happens here. So you can take a tube, put it in a metastable minimum. So this means that it wraps this topological cycle at a finite radius. And then quantum mechanically, it can tunnel to the supersymmetric minimum. So this tube sweeps out the two-sphere. And since it has opposite charge than the flux on this two-cycle, it will eat up some of the flux. It will emit some radiation. And you can interpret this as emitting the last Hawking quantum before the solution settles down in the supersymmetric extrema minimum. Sure.
Is it at the right temperature, or is it kind of very hot quantum that cools out?
The energy is given by the non-extremality that the supercube adds, which is given by, which is determined by this parameter.
Right. So the question is that delta a big number, or is it kind of small?
So you can play with this because you can tune the tube charges. And here in this example, I showed you one particular, one just putting one supertube, but you can imagine putting many supertubes in this configuration. So I don't know what answer to give because it depends on the microstate you look at, I guess. I mean, you cannot make, so if this were very hot, I guess, then this would be very non-extremal. And at some point, you leave the Probe approximation. So I cannot, I mean, in
given the charges, isn't there a temperature? Or
well, for here at zero temperature, yeah. then you make it non-extremal.
Mass, yeah,
yeah, and this is bounded by how much you can do in a probe analysis.
Sure, but I wasn't telling you whether that is typical or not.
I'm not talking about typicality here. So in the beginning, I said the best would be if you can have, you know, a geometric basis. But even for extrema states, if you have a geometric basis, a generic state would be given by superposition. So each one of those, so this is a particular basis element, if you wish.
When we have these tunneling amplitudes and configurations like that, in some sense, we should expect that some classical analysis is still good. Just because we're doing superpositions doesn't eliminate the semi-classical analysis. The big question is whether the gap that you get here is comparable to what you would expect from Hawking radiation or not, and that's the question.
And the answer is I haven't done the tunneling computation yet, but that is something that I am up to do. Okay. So there you can have brain flux annihilation. And then the other thing that you can compute is what, at which scale or how deep the throats of these microstate geometries are as compared to the black hole. And I will not give the details. I will just state the result. So the question is, are these non-extremal microstate geometries, do they end here, or do they go somewhere here, or what happens? And we find that most of the microstates have a size of the order of the black hole throat. Then there is many that even end before you reach the horizon, and then there are some that go below. And from the probe analysis, there is no mechanism that favors this. So maybe there's an entropic argument of what settles the throat depth.
It goes below, but it still doesn't develop a horizon?
No, it doesn't develop. Well, this is a probe analysis, so you would have to backrack and see whether it collapses behind the horizon. It cannot get too low, because then the cosmic censorship is violated. So there's really a bound, and there can only be a few that are sort of deeper. Okay, so it seems that some of the physics of extremal microstates survives as you go away from extremality. So that may be a hint that even near extremal microstates can be obtained by perturbing extremal microstates via antibrains. Now, let me just. Yes?
We already have that for extremal microstates, that most of them are in the size of a black hole.
Yes.
So we would expect that the probe analysis works, that should really change, right?
Could happen that if you make it non-extremal, it suddenly collapses and something happens. The fact that we find many configurations that even end before the horizon might tell you that, you know, they're stable against perturbations away from extremality.
Follow up on that question. In the probe analysis, you're not changing your background. So the black size of the black hole is really staying fixed.
No, the size of the so actually what we do is we compare the size of the extremal microstate to the black hole that has the non-extremality parameter given by the supertube. So that's what we actually compare. So this is the calculation that we do without doing the back reaction. The clean way is to compute the back reaction and then compute the throat length. But I will tell you now why this is currently not feasible. But first, let me recap. So I said you can use metastable supertubes to get near extremal microstates in the probe regime. The BPS microstates are held up by these topological cycles threaded by flux. And then you get metastability by putting antibrains. And they have these two features. So that raises the question, can we go all the way to non-extremality using this mechanism? And can we get Schwarzschild microstates? So you would imagine that you construct a geometry that has topological cycles that are each threaded by flux and anti-flux. And this sounds somewhat like building up the black hole and the entropy by brains and anti-brains. OK, so we need to back react our supertubes, and that is problematic. So what has been shown over the past years where anti-brain back reaction was discussed in various supergravity backgrounds, the upshot of this analysis is the following. If you try to back react anti-brains on backgrounds with charge dissolved in flux, you end up with singularities. And these singularities are not sourced by the anti-D3 brains. They are in the flux surrounding the anti-D3 brains. And so the best studied case is certainly that of anti-D3 brains in Klebanov-Strassler. Then when they first found that singularities appeared, several people said that there are several resolution mechanisms. So for example, people said that you smear the anti-brains on the tip of the conifold, so that's why you get singularities. Then there was the question of if you only do a linearized back reaction and not the full one, that you will get singularities because of that. Then there's another question of whether the asymptotics have something to do with the singularities, and so on. And so let me just give some brief kind of status. So the first back reaction was done at the linearization in the anti-brain charge. Well, actually, it's the ratio of anti-brain charge over the flux in the background. And people said, OK, this is an artifact. The singularities are an artifact of singularization, and they will disappear once you do the full back reaction. Well, those people did the full back reaction for the anti-D3 and then some other backgrounds. And the answer is they're still singularities. So then you can ask, are they similarity is a result of smearing. Well, for the entity 3, you cannot do it because you lose symmetry, and so you cannot do the back reaction. But there's other backgrounds where you can fully localize anti-brains, and you still have singularities. Then you can ask, the boundary of these backgrounds is always ADS-like. So maybe it acts like a reflecting box, and so the singularities appear because of that. Sorry, this is also not the case. Even if the space-time is asymptotically flat, you also have singularities.
What do the singularities look like? What more can you say about their characteristics?
So first you try, so you end up with a lot of singularities, and then try to match UV and IR. And when you do that, so first you start by curing all the singularities in the IR. And so there's various singularities in all the fluxes. So for example, in the D3, you have H3 and F3, and those are singular. Now you try to, so there's integration constants, and you try to adjust them in such a way that the solution becomes regular. And you find that you cannot. There are still singularities in the fluxes that are on directions that are not on the anti-brain world volume. Okay, so now that the singularities seem to be really there, we have to try to make sense of them. So the first is, can they be resolved by polarization? That means the following. So I showed you in the beginning that you can polarize entity 3s into NS5s. And it turns out that the singularities have exactly the structure that you would expect for polarization into some higher dimensional brains. But they have the wrong coefficients. So in this paper, they show that there is no polarization of entity 3 brains into D5 brains. And by some arguments, you can say that there's also no polarization into NS5 brains, or that there should not. So it seems that the polarization will not cure the singularities. Then you can ask, well, let's hide them behind the horizon. Also, that doesn't seem to be what happens. So these two groups have shown that these singularities can probably not be hidden behind the horizon. And then there's the question of maybe the singularity signals a new instability. So one in this back reaction business, one starts with a stationary ansatz. And so maybe that is too restrictive. And the actual configuration is time-dependent and wants to evolve. And their brains are dynamical. And so maybe that's why singularities form. And that's still
an open possibility.
So it seems that whether smeared or localized, whether you have ADS asymptotics or flat space, there seem to be singularities when you try to backreact anti-brains. And they do not seem to be resolved by polarization into higher dimensional brains or cloaked by a horizon. If these singularities are really unphysical and you cannot find any other way of making sense of them, then this would mean that the dual gauge theories, if you have an ADS asymptotics, do not
have metaphysical vacuum,
and you cannot use anti-brains to get a de Sitter landscape. Okay. So doesn't this sound bad for our near-extremal MIGO states? Well, first is to say that the anti-brain configurations that we use to get metastable minima in MIGO states are very different and actually have a much richer structure than just plain entity 3 brains or plain N2 brains. So you can think of them as M5 brains that carry two species of electric charge. So you have more channels to polarize. You can have either one of them to be opposite to the background or both of them. These are tubes, so they also have a local dipole charge, and they rotate, so they have an intrinsic angular momentum. But most importantly, if you look at supertubes and you backreact them in their supersymmetric minima, they are locally smooth. So they backreact into smooth supergravity solutions. And the smoothness near the brain doesn't know whether supersymmetry is broken globally or not. So you could expect that even for metastable supertubes, you will still get smooth solutions, and this may avoid singular backreaction. But of course, one has to do it, and there's a problem with that. Because unlike, say, N33 brains that are localized on some, well, not localized, but they are dependent on one variable, where they are in the throat, say, the supertubes depend on two variables. There are points in R3 and they wrap the fiber, so there's a density. And if you want to backrack them, you have to solve coupled PDEs in two variables. And just as a comparison for the N33s, it was a very complicated analysis. I think it took 3 papers, and this was a function of one variable. So this is currently not feasible. Other questions at this point?
So is it not feasible analytically?
Yeah, not analytically. Certainly not analytically at this point. So if you do linearized backreaction, then there is a formalism for one variable. If you want to do the similar case here, then you would have to extend this formalism first. Maybe you can do it numerically, but it still depends on two variables, so it's not so clear. OK, so this is currently out of scope. So what do we do to study metastability away from the probe regime? And actually, there is another way, another avenue that you can pursue. And this is if you take the antibrains all the way to weak coupling. So if you do microstate counting of black holes, we have the picture that in the regime where GS is very large, we have supergravity, we have black holes. And then in the regime where GS is zero, we have a bunch of brains, which we count. Now, Denef has found that even for configurations, say, where you don't have black holes, but you have multi-center configurations, so these are naked brain sources, you can find an interpolation between GS is zero and GS is large. And this interpolation is done by so-called pure quantum mechanics. So the picture is at GS is zero, you have a fusion of brains at a single point. And as you increase the string coupling, you can separate stacks of brains. They have strings stretched between them. And as you separate them more, these strings become massive, and you can integrate them out. And then when you go all the way to the regime where supergravity is valid, these objects will form the normal supergravity p-brain solutions. Now you can go one step further, and this is what those people did. And you can increase the coupling even further and open up an extra dimension. And when you do this, you can find that these singular brain source configurations become actually smooth geometries. So this is the line of GS, so to say, if you want to study supersymmetric black hole microstates or supersymmetric multicenter configurations. If you want to study BPS brain configurations. Now, I talked about metastability, studying metastability in this regime, which is hard to do. So what you can do is you can go the other way and study metastability in this regime.
But there, why would you expect it to survive as you increase the coupling?
So if I increase the coupling, as I've made the stability in the probe analysis, I increase the coupling. And for the cases where you can do back reaction, you find singularities. So something happens. Now I want to go and decrease the coupling so that all the brains are, so to say, light. And then ask, is there metastability here?
Yeah, well, maybe you can do that. But again, what do you learn about the strong coupled case? Now, let's say there is.
Well, so now I want to take one step back and study metastability in general. And OK, let me take two more slides, and then I'll come back to your question, OK? So just to say some more words on this. So you start with a stack of brains labeled by gamma 1, 2, and 3. Then you have some strings stretched between them. The stack of brains has some position. There are some fermionic partners, and then some auxiliary B fields. These strings stretch between them. There are certain bosonic modes and the fermionic partners, and again, some auxiliary fields. And now I want to go to a larger coupling and integrate out those fields, those strings stretched between. And when you do that, you get a potential that takes this seemingly simple form. So the strings that you integrated out give you these mass terms. There is a Kij of them stretched between two brains labeled by I and J. There's some kinetic term where mu is the reduced mass between the brains. And then there's some auxiliary field and some Fi parameter. So this is the potential on the Coulomb branch of this group of quantum mechanics between two stacks of brains, I and J. And that's what I want to look at. So in particular, I want to study a three-center configuration. So there's three potential of this type between 1, 2, 2, 3, and 3, 1. Now, if you integrate out these auxiliary fields, you get an effective potential. And if you solve for the minimum of this potential, you get this equation. So this tells you that for a fixed number of brains that were stretched here, fixed number of Fi parameter, it gives you the separation between the stack of brains, Rij. Now, I said this is this line of GS, so everything that you compute here, you can do a corresponding computation here. And here you see this explicitly. So these solutions, so these equations that tell you the equilibrium configuration of these objects can be found in supergravity as well. So here you have, you know, three back-reacted stacks of brains, and they, the minima are given by solving this equation. You just have to identify this denominator and these parameters here, and there's a one-to-one map of solutions from the Coulomb branch to the supergravity regime. And so I want to look at the Coulomb branch and study now metastability there. So I was talking about metastability in a probe approximation. So this would be somewhere in between, because there's one brain that is light and two brains that are back-reacted. And let me zoom in a bit. So for the supersymmetric case, all the information that is given in the probe action, you can recover everything from the supergravity regime. And I just showed you that the solutions here map one-to-one to solutions here. So for the supersymmetric case, you can look at any of these regimes and you find, well, the answer, the same answer if you look at a different regime. So there's some sort of triality here. Okay, let me skip this part. So I want to ask now, if one of those brains is not supersymmetric with respect to the other, but metastable, what happens in the corresponding Coulomb description? So I told you that if you want to backreact and go to the full supergravity regime, you don't know what you get here. In the cases where you can do it, you get singularities. So you go the other way and ask what happens in the corresponding quiver. Do you find metastability? And this is a preliminary result. Sorry. So this is the potential for a supertube in the probe analysis, which I showed you before, well, a different potential for you before. So you find supersymmetric minima, and you find some metastable minima. Now, I take the Coulomb branch potential, and I match the parameters of the DBI and the Coulomb description by matching the parameters in the supersymmetric minima. And you see this is at the same location, so that's fine. But then at the location where the, where the metastable minimum should be, there is none. So if you take the DBI action, you take everything to weak coupling, you match the corresponding, you match the DBI parameters to these corresponding parameters in the quiver description, and you find that there is no metastable minima where they should be. So this is a little puzzling. So now we have the following. It seems that if you backreact anti-brains, you get singularities, and metastability disappears when you go to strong coupling. But it also seems that if you go to weak coupling, metastability disappears. So what does it mean? So it seems that metastability only arises in a probe approximation. I have to stress that. Sorry, was this a tautology?
No, you're just reacting to this.
Okay. Okay, so this is still preliminary, but what it seems to say is that metastability is only in one of those regimes. So it seems that if you look at supergravity, probe approximation, and the corresponding weakly coupled quiver description, they all tell you different physics when you break supersymmetry. So for the BPS case, all of those, you could find the equilibrium configuration by looking at each one of them and then mapping the corresponding parameters to the other to say what the configuration looks like in the other description. But now you break supersymmetry and you find that this is no longer the case. In supergravity, you find singularities, and in the quiver, the metastability is just not there. So on the supergravity side, I guess the What is the most open question, so to say, or the most likely answer to the singularities is that, well, other than you have to throw them away completely, is that you use a stationary ansatz and that causes the trouble. In the quiver, this may be phrased as you freeze the system and actually wants to do something, it wants to move, and if you freeze it, well, metastability disappears. But this leaves open the question whether you can find metastability if you change that and if you let the system evolve, or if it just rolls down a potential. Okay. So, and this is my conclusion. So in the first part, I showed you that you can get near-extremal microstates from certain antibranes in backgrounds with charge dissolved in flux. They have some appealing features. However, if you try to find the corresponding supergravity solution, for these configurations, this is currently not feasible, and we need to work a little harder. If you take the system to weak coupling, metastability seems to disappear as well, and this is and a more detailed analysis is upcoming to really make the point. Thanks.
I have a bit of a loaded question. How bad is this for the fuzzball program?
How bad is it? So we proposed one mechanism to get near extremal configurations.
Well,
so this doesn't say.
In particular, thinking about the overlap need to get things that are far from extremality.
Okay. So this is one mechanism by how you can get near extremality. If it doesn't work, that's not the mechanism. Then there's two possibilities. Either you only have the excision of space-time for extremal black holes, and for non-extremal something completely different happens. That is a possibility. Or that there's other mechanisms that give you this. So I don't know, just to make an analogy for the DS landscape, there's other mechanisms that do you the uplifting. So even if the entity 3 is not what happens, although it's the generic sort of mechanism, there's other possibilities. So here one would have to work a little harder to see if there is something else.
Yeah, I guess to be fair, I should have asked the same question for the landscape.
Same answer here.
When you say other mechanisms, in that case, you're thinking about for the landscape.
Also for non-extremal microstates. I mean, it's certainly very appealing to say, okay, my black hole is made of constituents that have positive and negative charge, and they're asymptotically neutral. Maybe there's something else. Maybe the fuzzball program only applies to extremal black holes. That's also a possibility.
But again, do you have something in mind?
Other mechanisms?
Yeah.
Nothing concrete at the moment. I'm still trying to figure out, so first finish this and see whether we have missed something. For example, we want to include a larger range. It could be that the metastable minimum just goes somewhere completely in a different regime of space. This is still an open question. And as I told you, even if it turns out that plain antibranes lead to singularities and you should throw away the solution, supertubes have this kind of smoothness property. And one really has to do it to see whether it works or not.
When people look at the back reaction of the antibrain, they put in a singularity at the location of the antibrain. They don't try to.
They don't put it in. They get it out.
You get it out from the solutions.
Yes.
You don't try to, you know, resolve that in any way. You accept that as a singularity because you're putting in an antibrain.
So one possibility was that the singularity resolves into. It's there because it wants to relax into a different kind of brain.
Right.
So that was one argument. And then, so for the entity 3 brain case, the 3 brains were smeared on the 3, right? So you would have to localize this to see whether you get a. So for the KPV potential, you start with endobrains located on the tip, and then you polarize into NS5. Now, in the endobrain back reaction, the 3 is smeared. So you cannot directly compute the NS5 from this solution. You would first have to localize the antibrains here and then find the back correction for this and then do the polarization. However, this means that you have to solve, again, coupled PDEs in two variables, which is not feasible. Then, then what you can do is, so there is a channel where you polarize into NS5 brains. And for Polzinski-Strassler, you know that if there is a polarization channel into NS5, there's also one into D5. And the D5 polarization channel happens actually, so there is this three sphere. And then there's also a shrinking two sphere. And the polarization channel of the D5 happens on this two sphere somewhere away from the tip. And Bena, Grania, Kupestan, and Masai computed the potential for the D5 polarization. And this has exactly the form of the D5 polarization in Polzinski-Strassler. So this is kind of a hint that, oh, this looks like the singularity really wants to relax. And there's an example where this really happens in Polzinski-Strassler. However, if you write down the potential, which is something like, you know, it depends on the radius, and there's some parameters in front of the behavior near the brain, these coefficients do not allow metastability. So they computed this D5 polarization potential in the fully back-reacted, smeared, and the D3 brain solution, and they find it doesn't want to polarize.
One more question.
Yes.
Has anyone looked at just solving the constraints of supergravity? I mean, not try to get the whole solution. If you want to know if there's some solution back there without extra nasty singularities, you don't need to solve the whole equation. All you need to know is if there's initial data, which has the anti-grain and no extra singularities. And that's a simpler problem, because you just have to look at the constraints.
And you say if a singularity appears in the full back reaction, this would be present already in just solving the constraints?
Yes, because if it's not present in the constraints, then you're in pretty good shape. Then you know that there's some configuration. Now, it might evolve. So you're still in that situation where it could all be time-dependent. And you might develop singularities in the future. But, you know, cosmic censorship and whatnot might make you believe that if you develop singularities in the future, then I guess you don't want black holes. But at least it'll settle the question about whether you necessarily generate these time-like singularities every time you add the anti-grain, because there might be some smooth configuration which has the right charges, but without those extra singularities.
If you want it to be static or stationary, then
no. I mean, I think they've shown it's not stationary, right? They've shown that it can't be static. So they look for the static solution.
Right, so initial data will evolve, and then presumably it will crunch.
Well, that's the question. But, well, can you even write down the
initial data? Yeah, but maybe there's not even initial data. I mean, that would be a statement that you always get singularities even initially.
No, we know that we can put brains and anti-brains in regular flat space, and we know that they attract each other and eventually lose all together.
You expect non-singular initial data.
You expect, well, except for brain sources.
At strong coupling? I mean,
yes. Okay.
So in the probe approximation, for sure.
Yeah, the probe approximation, yes, that you can do here as well. But if you just put, say, D6 and enter D6, then this is in a kind of weakly coupled regime, and you know that they will nucleate. I mean, they will.
Right.
But this is weakly coupled.
Yeah, but you expect that also strong coupling.
Yeah, you also expect the
because it's not metastability. And usually the BPS condition is that the gravitational attraction exactly balances the other stuff.
But now everything is going the same direction.
Yeah.
All the forces are.
Conversely, well, if you still found the singularity in the, you know, in the initial data, then that would tell you you're doing something wrong.
So actually, there is one of those papers that I showed you, the Swedish group. They were making general. So where are they? General arguments about a brain flux clumping, where they say you have this anti-brain and you have the flux around. You know that the back reaction gives you a singularity of flux, so the flux wants to clump on the anti-brain, and that's the dynamical situation. That's what should happen. The flux wants to clump, and it wants to annihilate with the anti-brain. They have some arguments that led them to, you know, say that it can be resolved by time dependence. But I don't know whether they looked at the constraints.
Oh, right. Well, if there are no further questions, let's thank Andrea again.